Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 228. If you're going to San Diego Comic-Con, make sure and come see Matt, Jonah, and myself at the Nerdist Podcast live at the Balboa Theater Friday night, July 13th. And then Saturday at noon, the Nerdist Channel panel with special guests Neil deGrasse Tyson, Gary Delabonte, Alice Days of Alex Albrecht, me, Chris Hardwick, and never-before-seen footage from stuff that's coming up on the Nerdist YouTube channel. Be relevant to your interests. I would like to thank Stamps.com for, I promise myself I wouldn't cry, sponsoring the Nerdist Podcast this episode. Stamps.com is printable postage. So if you have an internet connection and a printer, just print that shit out and you're done. Then you can print out exactly the postage you need. You'll never have to go to the post office again. You print shit out, you put it outside. The postman picks it up and delivers it to its intended recipient. End of story. It's essentially how I was able to start all the Nerdist stuff in the beginning, was not having to go to the post office to mail stuff to people. That I can't say that was the only thing that kept the Nerdist podcast afloat. Katie, where's your microphone? But it was tremendously helpful to me. Why is your wind guard on there red? It looks like a clown. It looks like a tiny, thin clown head.
Then I know it's mine.
Aw, that's adorable. Do you identify with clowns?
No.
Katie,
maybe.
If a bunch of clowns turned up at your house and like 50 of them got out of a tiny car, so you know that they could get into small places because clown cars are TARDISes, you were like, I want to get rid of these clowns and I want to mail them somewhere, but I don't want to go to the post office to do that because there's just too many clowns. What would you do?
I would probably use stamps.com.
What?
Yeah.
Unheard of, except for all the stuff that I've been saying before just now. So entirely heard of.
Yeah, through the Nerdist podcast.
Well, right now, you can use the promo code Nerdist for this very special offer. It's a no-risk trial. You get $110 worth of stuff, including a digital scale, and $55 worth of free postage. So go to stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and then type in Nerdist. That's it. Stamps.com, enter Nerdist. Katie, what do we have coming up for this episode of the Nerdist podcast?
We have
LeVar Burton. I beat you to it because I'm super excited.
I'm excited, too. I used to watch my Reading Rainbow.
Reading Rainbow, which now has an app, the Reading Rainbow app. And LeVar, you know, it never fails to amaze me. I guess I shouldn't be amazed by this, but so far, everyone that we've had on the podcast from Next Generation, Brent Spiner, obviously Will Wheaton, Sir Patrick Stewart, now LeVar Burton, every one of them is fucking awesome. Like, so cool. And LeVar was no exception. He was so amazing to have on the podcast. I love that. I hugged him afterwards. I'm like, I gotta hug you. And he was like, let's do it. So we hugged. LeVar Burton, you're a damn fine man, my friend. And this was an absolute pleasure to have you on. It's the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 228. LeVar Burton!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Microphone. Make love to the microphone, LeVar.
Yes.
There it is.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, that's sweet. You got some headphones there if you want to put those on.
I love hearing myself on the radio.
Matt Myra's on his way. I don't know where he is. He's usually not late, but I thought it would be fun just to start with Adam so he could come in flustered. Because he's a huge fan of yours. Don't be freaked out, but he knows a lot about Next Generation, but he's okay.
Matt is a borderline stalker. Is he not?
I mean, you know, stalker with a small s.
Yeah.
And you would write it in pencil.
Big of heart.
Big of heart.
And a little creepy.
But when he gets here, don't tell him that.
Okay.
No. Yeah, no. We don't want to set him off.
No.
We don't want to set him off.
No, that restraining order is apparently not enough.
You will never remember this, LeVar Burton, but I've been friends with Mr. Wheaton since we were teenagers, and I did actually come to the set a number of times when he was working there.
You used to hang with the WW?
Double Dubs, I call him. Yep, used to hang with Double Dubs down there at the old Paramount lot, and it was right at the period where he was going through the terrible teens,
yep.
And just kind of wanted to go do other things. So it was an interesting time for him.
A young man's got to sow his wild oats.
He did that by moving to Kansas for a couple of years and quitting the entertainment business.
Well, WW has interesting ideas about oats. and if you want to explore your wild oats, Kansas is the place to go.
Geek oats. He was sowing his geek oats by going to develop video technologies.
You know what? He, of all of us, Will is the most techno-savvy.
Absolutely. Always has been.
Yeah. Always has been, and he has developed into a really fine writer.
He's a fantastic writer.
Yeah, he is.
Just a good guy. I'm glad that you guys are all still pals. I don't know why. It just makes me happy.
Does it?
Yeah, because, you know...
You would prefer to think that we really hate each other.
No, I wouldn't. Because, you know, the show hit me at a very... You know, Will and I are about the same age, so right. It hit me at in a very... developmentally important time of my appreciation for things.
Right.
And so the show is special to me too. And it's nice to think like, oh, now you guys, you know, you guys did Calgary, you all got together.
Right. So tell me in that developmental stage you were going through.
Yeah.
Deanna Troi or Beverly Crusher?
Oh man, that's a Betty and Veronica thing. I think.
Let me really complicate things for you. I got to throw in Tasha Yar.
Yeah. Tasha Yar. Well, I mean, after she hooked up with
Data.
I mean, it's kind of. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you follow that.
No,
a robotic.
Yeah. No.
I know he's fully functioning, but probably there are upgrades.
There are.
And so I don't know. I don't know how you follow that.
Yeah.
Tasha Yar felt a little like she'll mess you up. Like you'll get thrown around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some people like that.
I think you. I think you marry Beverly Crusher.
Right, okay, right. You date Deanna Troi.
You date is a kind way to say that. And then you would have to, murderous, passionate,
yes.
Rageful love with Tasha Yar.
There you go.
So I think that's how that all wraps up there. And it doesn't even really take into account all of the side... The ancillary hookups from just visiting different worlds.
Right.
So it really is just a giant floating space orgy, I think.
Pretty much. Except for Geordi. I never understood that. Geordi never got the girl.
I wonder why that was.
You know what? I'll be honestly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
But I believe that the writers did not know how to deal with black male sexuality.
Really?
Everybody had sex on the ship, including the android.
Yeah. Come on, guys, the robot got some. What's happening?
But the black man?
But the
not so much.
And the guy who, with his visor, could see a lot of things that would be important to a lady in the bedroom.
Absolutely. I'm just saying. It was never explored.
Best with his hands?
Right.
An engineer?
Right.
Come on!
I'm telling you.
All right. I'm going to go on a limb and say, LeVar, there is probably some fan fiction out there where Geordi has some stuff going on.
I would hope so.
But I don't know if... But this is a travesty. I apologize.
Opportunities missed is how I categorize it.
So when did so many things I want to talk about with you. I want to get to Reading Rainbow. I want to get to the Reading Rainbow app. I want to talk about, but I just want to figure out where'd you start? What was what was your intended path? Was it just, you know, in general, just want to be an actor? Did you want to create? What was it specifically that you set out to do? I mean, I know, you know, going back to roots and, you know, if you just did that, it would be mind-blowing. If you just did that, it would be mind-blowing.
Roots was my first audition. I was a sophomore at the University of Southern California.
Oh, wow.
In Los Angeles.
What were you studying?
Studying theater.
Okay.
With an intention to move to New York and you know, hustle my way onto the Broadway stage. But this television miniseries, nobody knew what a miniseries was.
Right.
At the beginning. Roots was the second, I think. Rich Man, Poor Man was broadcast in 8 weeks, and the ABC executives changed it up for Roots and broadcast all 12 hours and 8 consecutive nights of programming.
Wow.
Fearing that the audience would not respond well to a story where, in a country, 80% of the people are white and 20% are black, the whites were the villains and the black people were the heroes.
Right.
And the audience grew almost exponentially every night.
Wow.
Pretty wacky.
But the Alex Haley book was very popular, though.
It had won the Pulitzer Prize that year.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It was a runaway bestseller. It absolutely was.
I mean, I think that's one of those... I can only remember 3 miniseries in my head. Rich Man, Poor Man, right. Roots, and The Thornbirds.
And The Thornbirds.
Those are the 3 that defined what that thing was that the networks were doing.
The novel... for television.
So in literally in 8 nights,
yeah.
Did your life just change like that?
In actually 2. I played the young Kunta Kinte in hours 1 through 4.
Yeah.
The first 2 nights. And it was immediate. The response was immediate. My life changed literally overnight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious to know about this. So the subject matter of this film, you're going to SC in it, which is, you know, the snazzy school, really, you know, how connected were you to, you know, what you felt like it meant to be a black male in that time period? And then did working on that film alter your perception, or what did it do to you?
I felt like I had been preparing to play that role the whole of my life. I really, from the very first moment I read the first sides, I knew I could play this character. I just connected with him immediately. Here's Matt.
Matt?
Sorry, guys. There was a coolant leak. I had to reroute main power through the secondary coupling.
Wow.
You know how it is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I do. Matt, totally. You know what? And are you okay?
I'm good. Everybody? Breach is averted.
Right?
Ship's going to be okay, everybody.
You know what? I'm so happy that you did not have to eject the warp core, because that...
Oh, my God.
There is nothing worse than having to eject the warp core.
I like when you say in... I forget which movie it is. No, I don't. Insurrection. You're fresh.
Are you kidding me?
He's trying to downplay it. All right, let's just be honest.
And then he says, we're fresh out of warp cores. I like that.
Yeah.
Because they're fresh out.
Fresh out of warp cores.
Great line. Good reading. Good reading.
Thank you, Matt.
Matt, you've brought some a surprise lightness to we were just talking about Roots.
No, I assumed you were talking about Star Trek.
No, well, no. We were not.
Listen, Kunta Kinte probably could have been a chief engineer.
I'm sure there's some reality. I'm sure there's some reality where Geordi goes to the holodeck.
Yeah.
Ends up...
puts on a loincloth.
Yeah. And then Roots.
Yeah.
As long as Ben Vereen's involved, I'm in.
Yeah. Then you're in as well.
Thumbs up. Thumbs up, Matt. Thumbs up.
So I want you to be able to finish this thought. Like, you said it completely changed the scope of... It was this role you were meant to play your whole life.
It really felt that way. It did. And... you know, and there's been over the last 35 years, this is the 35th anniversary of Roots airing for the first time in this country.
Oh my gosh.
I've had a real journey with the character of Kunta, from really wanting to try and make sure that it did not prevent me from being able to act a variety of roles.
Yeah.
So he went from being sort of this albatross to, you know, different ebbs and flows. Now Kunta Kinte is a recognized international symbol for freedom and the indomitability of the human spirit. It's been quite a quite a trip.
And if I remember correctly, way different from leading male black roles that were pretty standard for the time.
This was the 70s, and most black men on TV were pimps, hustlers. Yeah, perps of one kind.
Or married to Florida.
Or married to Esther Roll. You're right. Absolutely. Yeah. Your knowledge of pop culture in the 70s is stunning.
It's rough. I'm sorry, guys.
Here come the big one. Here it come.
Oh, why'd they kill him off?
Red Fox?
No, John Ennis.
Oh, John Ennis. Oh, you're talking about Good Times.
Good Times.
I'm sorry. I was talking about Sanford and Son.
Your knowledge of pop culture in the 70s, not so good.
I'll tell you what. Wait a minute. How about this?
Uh-huh.
Red Fox, Damond Wilson.
Yes.
Sanford and Son.
There you go.
You just named two people in the cast.
Well, yeah.
Congratulations.
Jimmy Walker, who I bowled against when I was a kid.
Really?
Because he was a big bowler, and I was really good, so I bowled against him on the Mike Douglas show in 1981.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You did the Mike Douglas show?
When I was a little kid, yeah.
As a bowler?
As a tiny bowler.
You were like the Tiger Woods of bowling?
I was the Tiger Woods of bowling, but I didn't pursue it to the point where I could have extramarital affairs.
You could have been on the PBA.
Yes, the difference being that Tiger Woods' adulthood is crowded with millions of dollars. Adulthood on the PBA is thousands at best.
But you get to wear those really cool shirts.
I can still wear them.
I suppose.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Then you're that guy.
Then I am that guy. Well, that's why I put a bowling show on my little YouTube channel, because I was living out my dream.
Your bowling show, though, you choose to wear t-shirts. Like, no. You should wear bowling shirts.
No. See, here's why you don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Those shirts you're thinking of came along in the 70s. The shirts that we're wearing are more representative of what my dad wore in the 60s.
Oh, I gotcha.
The 60s, they were these, they weren't quite t-shirts, but they were these polyester blend shirts that came, there were no collars, and the sleeves came to to the elbow.
It's the kind of shirt that Nelson Burton Jr. would have worn.
That's exactly right. Nice. Oh, your knowledge of bowling culture is very... Pulling out the Nelson Burton Jr. reference.
My uncle.
Not bad. Wow, that's amazing.
The white sheep of the family.
Why aren't there more African-American
bowlers?
It's real
awkward at Kwanzaa, but otherwise.
Hey, guys. He brought another bowling ball to Kwanzaa. He doesn't know how it works.
Where do the candles go?
I'll just line the gutter, right?
Right, guys? Come on. What are we doing? What's happening here? It seems to have been... what happened in the period between Roots and Star Trek, which would have been almost 10 years...
Reading Rainbow. Well, I did a series of TV movies.
Yeah.
Right in the late 70s and early 80s.
What was the worst one?
The worst one. Well, the worst one was probably Emergency.
The television series?
No, it was a TV movie. That starred Sarah Purcell. Do you remember Sarah Purcell?
Oh, I do remember Sarah Purcell. Yeah.
What was the show?
I can't remember, but I remember seeing her on like Battle of the Network Stars or something, I think.
She was on a show called Real People.
Real People? Oh, of course.
Who else was on Real People, Chris?
Skip Stevenson.
And?
John Davison.
And?
Fran Tarkenton.
And?
Kathy Lee Crosby.
And?
And the Yogi Kudu.
Byron.
Allen. Yes.
There you
See,
go.
Who doesn't know pop culture? I was actually at it.
Then Byron Allen figured out how to make all the money.
Yeah, I mean, really?
Oh, wait. Did I mix up? I mixed up. I'm sorry. I mixed up Real People and That's Incredible. That's what I just did.
Well, you did, but you know what? It was pretty much the same.
You got to it.
It was
pretty much the same.
I was at the taping of That's Incredible when that guy, the Yogi Kudu, got in the tiny box.
Oh, really?
Do you remember that episode?
No.
I do not.
This guy, a contortionist called the Yogi Kudu, got inside a small plexiglass box. He managed to squeeze his body through a tiny opening, a reverse birth, if you will. And he it was just like this smushed person inside this little tiny plexiglass box. And we were at the taping, and he was in there so long that they actually thought he died.
Entertainment.
That would have been entertainment. Turns out he was not dead. Everything was fine.
That's good.
Well,
that's my side
story.
Happy
ending.
Happy ending.
But
what happened in Emergency?
Yeah, what was this?
So it was this. It was not a good TV movie, but they wanted they wanted to surround Sarah Purcell with actors. She had been a morning show host here in Los Angeles before Real People, and so there were just incredible actors: Conchita Farrell, Gary Lockwood, Penny Pizer, Gary Frank from Family, and the producer was Bob Justman.
Oh.
And I knew Bob Justman's name from the credits of my favorite show growing up, which was Star Trek. Robert H. Justman was an associate producer on TOS.
So it's really who you know.
Sometimes, because I would pump him for stories every day. Just tell me what it was like. Tell me about Gene Roddenberry. And when Bob was working with Gene at Paramount on The Next Generation, I got a call from Bob one day. He said, I know you've never done a television series, but would you consider, we're bringing Star Trek back. And I had one question. Is Gene involved? And he said, yes. I said, I, what do I need to do? So that was the beginning of, I guess, about a month, 6 weeks of an audition process for the role of Geordi LaForge.
Did they audition you in the visor?
No, the visor hadn't been actually fashioned yet. They did.
You're
for the,
really stretching the word fashion.
they just
it's
basically
a fucking banana clip. They took
the hair thing and then they just flipped it down.
You know that is. You don't know how true that is. That is Michael Okuda, the wonderful Michael Okuda, graphic artist for Next Generation, and his wife Denise Okuda were at the movies. And Michael went to put his arm around Denise and brushed her hairband. It fell down over her eyes, and
and then she could see everyone's heat signatures.
And that was the inspiration. But they brought in a pair of sunglasses for my network audition, and I wore sunglasses.
They say play it blinder.
Well, I don't think we need to see anything else. So you're hired. You are hired. Did you know anyone else who was auditioning for the role at that time?
Well, for the role, no, I did not know anyone. But apparently, Tim Russ. Was
oh yeah,
was
I heard that
auditioned. Yeah. I've seen the list. The list circulates around on the interwebs now and again.
Sorry about that. I'll take it down.
It's too late.
Of potential actors that Paramount was thinking about for the various roles. And let's see, Wesley Crusher. They had a bunch of names. And for Geordi, I think who was on that list? Snipes, Wesley Snipes.
Oh, really?
Snipes was being considered for Geordi. I'll have to look that up. There's
Geordi would be in space jail for not paying taxes.
Oh man! Oh. Commander LaForge, can you please reroute the power to the main crippler? Always bet on black. Cut, Wesley. You gotta stop saying that. You gotta stop saying that.
One day it will be a line in a movie I soon do.
I love that you were a huge Star Trek fan going. I mean, because, you know, I think a lot of young people now just sort of take for granted the idea of all media is available all times. Mm. But in the 70s, you know, if you wanted to see Star Trek, it was you. First of all, you couldn't record it.
Right.
You just had to catch it on syndicated television or whatever your local, like, channel 31 was at, you know, midnight or whatever it was.
You had to watch it when it was on. You had to consult your local listings. That's the origin of the phrase.
I mean, TV Guide, appointment television. All television was appointment television because you literally couldn't miss it.
Right. Yeah, if you wanted to see it, you had to watch when it was on.
What a horrible life.
I know.
What did people so do?
While we're talking, three episodes of Chopped are probably recording right now.
I mean, seriously.
Let the meat rest, people. God.
I went on a road trip recently, and I was like, what do people do before smartphones and Yelp reviews of hotels? And how did they occupy their bratty kids in the backseat without iPads? Like, it is really not that long ago that we had to live without all these things.
It's true.
But the iPad turned five today. I mean, the iPhone turned five today.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday, iPhone.
Happy birthday, iPhone.
You did it.
Yeah.
So, Emergency... Who was your character? Why was it?
I played he wasn't a doctor. I think he was an orderly, but he had he could heal. He had the ability of hands-on healing, and it gave him headaches.
Interesting. This was not where I was expecting that to go.
I told you it was not good. This was not Roots.
It was Roots modern day, where the protagonist can heal people with his hands.
It was a bit, it was not. It was,
well, it sounds
stinky.
Terrible, and I'm glad
it was terrible. But it introduced me to Bob Justman.
To Bob Justman,
and it in large measure is responsible for my having been graced with the.
Well, then
with
I for one am glad.
You see, everything happens for a reason, right, Matt?
We did it.
Yeah.
What was your of the classic Star Trek episodes? Which storylines did you gravitate toward?
My favorite classic episode is, I don't know the name of it, but it's the one where Frank Gorshin has one side of his face
white and the other side is black.
Right, yeah. Matt?
What is the name of that?
Go ahead. Fuck. Pull it out.
I think it's called Ebony and Ivory.
Nope. That's not it at all.
Nope.
I forget.
We stumped Matt.
I forget.
Well, you stumped Matt on classic Star Trek.
Yeah, okay.
He can tell you anything you want about Next Generation.
Right.
He knows a great deal about classic Star Trek. But he knows everything about Next Generation.
Okay, we're going to put this to the test.
Oh, God.
We're going to put this to the test.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah,
whenever
yeah,
you want. Let me know.
All right. So not right this moment.
Yeah, sure. Just
but
whenever. When it gets there.
I'll come to you with something.
Because we don't want you to be mentally prepared for it.
No.
Of course.
That's the true measure of your ability is if on moment's notice when you're doing something else, you can turn around and say, Rigel 7, and then back to... or what?
Rigel 7.
What?
You're an idiot.
What?
That was the original track, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's old school.
Sorry. Rigel 7. Hey, sorry. Sorry, I got my Rigels mixed up, Matt.
And whatever. You call yourself a nerd.
I do. All right. I'll just be Erd. I lose the N. Erd. So I want to talk about Reading Rainbow.
That's
which, by the way, amazing. 26, 27 years?
26 years on TBS.
That's the sound it would make. When go to next.
Yep. That's right. Matt, you continue to impress.
That is
you had a big influence on my life, LeVar.
I mean, for a lot of reasons.
Much class I didn't have to actually do work. I got to just watch Roots and understand.
Right.
And then I learned about reading.
Yep.
And then I figured out how to fix a warp core breach. Really worked out.
Well, I mean, it's sort of, you know.
And they say television isn't education.
I mean, come on.
I mean, you're between Reading Rainbow and Geordi, you know, very academic.
Yeah.
Very, very academic approaches where, you know, where James Doohan was very like, I'm a blue collar Scotsman.
Yes.
I'm street smart. Yeah. You know, Geordi, very academic, very intelligent. And then you also have Reading Rainbow at the same time. So you are an intelligent individual and you are playing a very intelligent academic individual. And I think it does, you know, like, look at this guy. This guy sitting over here, super smart kid. You were an inspiration to this little guy over here.
I did want to become an engineer.
Did you?
I'm sorry I went into television.
It's okay. It really is. It suits you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Did you pitch the idea for Reading Rainbow?
No, it was the show was created by an educator, a woman named Twyla Liggett, who wanted to address.
That's an excellent name.
That is a wonderful name.
Twyla Liggett.
Twyla Liggett.
Yeah. There's a phenomenon in education called the summer loss phenomenon. When a child is learning how to read and they don't read over that 3-month summer vacation, their reading and comprehension skills plummet. And so the idea was to go to where the kids were, sitting in front of the tube, you know, on their summer breaks, and steer them back in the direction of literature and the written word using the medium of television. It was a pretty radical idea for the time.
And did you know right away, well, this show is connecting? Did they have a sense pretty quickly and like, yeah, this show's...
No, not really. PBS is not a part of the Nielsen rating system, right? So it really took a while to gauge the efficacy and the popularity of the show. But once we reached critical mass, there was no turning back.
I mean, no one... How many seasons did you actually do?
Well, all told, over the 25, almost 26 years, we did 153 episodes.
Wow.
But they were very intense. I mean, the show was a magazine show. We traveled all over the planet shooting Reading Rainbow.
What's great
one
about...
One time they visited the set of Star Trek.
Yes, we did. Yes, Matt, we did.
They sure did.
You must, your eyes must have bled.
I was like, what's happening?
This is the greatest crossover ever.
Our universes are colliding, man. My fandoms are just...
Really?
Mom, bring the diet soda and lock the doors. I'm not leaving. That is adorable.
Matthew, do you remember the book?
Oh, God, no.
The Bionic Bunny Show.
Oh, now I do.
Right?
Holy shit.
Right.
Wow.
I wish that you could see Matt's face in the studio. He did. He just had a flashback to his childhood.
What's great about Reading Rainbow is that they are what we call in the business evergreen.
Yeah.
Because people always need to learn how to read, so there's nothing about it that people are like, this isn't... people don't do this anymore. Yes, they do. People still need to read.
People still need to read and develop a passion for reading. And the point of the show has always been, or it always was, and even now in this new incarnation, it's to really get to a child when they're in that process of making the decision as to whether they will be a reader for life or not.
Mm-hmm.
And especially boys. It can be very difficult to get boys to really develop a passion for reading. And I'm proud to say that for 26 years, we were fairly successful at lighting that spark and at least, fanning into flame the passion for a lot of young
kids. What do you think is the key ingredient to, because kids, if something doesn't resonate with them, they immediately look away. What's the key ingredient for getting into a kid's brain and kind of igniting a passion towards something that they may not necessarily really care about initially?
Honestly?
Yeah.
Bait and switch.
Okay.
Yeah. You present them fun and the learning happens as a result of their engagement.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
Makes total sense now.
Listen, until we can,
you
until
son of
we,
a bitch.
until we can jack them into a mainframe via some sort of a thunderbolt type of a situation, then you do have to do the bait and switch. You can't just implant the information in their memories.
Not yet, but coming
pretty soon.
Pretty soon,
working on it now.
Right? It's gonna happen.
It is.
I mean, this is a very altruistic pursuit as well. But have you ever thought about turning your powers for evil? Now that you know the key ingredients of getting inside people's heads, have you said, LeVar, we really, and I'm talking to me here, we really need to figure out how to get in and take, you could be a very dangerous supervillain if you decided to go that route.
There's still time.
Oh. as the tips of your fingers are together. But I think it's you've done what they now refer to as transmedia. We used to call it cross-platform programming. Now we call porting anything over to another platform transmedia is the new word. So the Reading Rainbow app, since you're not doing television shows anymore, we talked about this in Attack of the Show the other day. Brilliant idea to bring it to an iPad.
And a whole new generation of kids who really don't have any, frame of reference for LeVar or Roots or Star Trek for that matter. But their parents do. And so we have an opportunity to have a conversation with both parents, a generation of parents, and their children. And we're having a lot of fun. The app came out last week, and it's being very well received. In 36 hours, we shot to number one in education.
Wow.
In the App Store, and we are still the top grossing app in education.
You know, those other companies are like looking at each other like, why couldn't we have started a brand 27 years ago? That's what you got to do.
Why not have like a reading reflection? Or something. I don't know.
What
they
else
got Rainbow.
Reading unicorn. What else do kids like? I don't know. What else do kids like? Reading clams? Nah, the kids hate clams.
Kids hate clams.
No, it's a fact. Kids hate clams.
They do.
They don't like clams.
I understand.
It's a textural thing.
Yeah, it's a texture thing. They're scary looking. Yeah. They clamp down. Yeah. They're hard. Yeah. They're gross. Clams are gross, kids. But maybe you would be the guy that could get kids to like clams because you know how they think. You're like the Pied Piper of everything. You could be the Pied Piper of clams if you wanted to be.
Boy,
that'd be a weird thing to choose to be.
That's a step down, don't you think?
What?
Chris?
You know,
Roots, Star Trek, The Next Generation, Reading Rainbow, the Pied Piper of clams.
No, that's got to be your album. You have to make an album.
Ah.
You have to make a music album.
With the Shat.
With the Shat or the Nimoy.
Right?
And
the Nimoy.
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand.
Here's a question. Have you heard Brent Spiner's albums?
Oh, yes, because Brent was on Brent does have a nice.
You know, I didn't want to bring this up, Chris Hardwick.
Okay, I'm ready for whatever you're about to dole out.
But you totally blew me off in Calgary.
Whoa. I wasn't in Calgary.
You weren't?
No.
Where was it?
Phoenix.
Phoenix. It was Phoenix.
Were you in Phoenix?
Well, yes, I was. And I was booked on your show. And then when Brent Spiner said he would do it,
yes.
I all of a sudden was disinvited for the 9 o'clock slot.
No.
For the early slot.
No.
And was asked to come at the ungodly hour of like 11 p.m.
No, you actually were... Brent was on the...
Chris, I am so curious as to how you're going to spin this.
I am now angry at you.
Wait a minute. It wasn't a situation of that. Brent was always on the first show.
Okay. All right.
And then when we found out you were going to be in Phoenix, we added a second show because the first show sold out.
Okay.
So then we asked you to be on the show, but we hadn't said what time it was yet.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then when we went and said, okay, actually, it's a late show.
Right.
And then the answer we got back was like, well, it's the show wasn't going to start till like 11 right. or something yeah. crazy like that. So you actually were not, Brent was actually booked first.
Okay.
And then we were going to add a second show and put you on the second show. And then, so then we went to Brent and asked him
to go early,
to go late.
Oh, to go
so
late.
That you could go early.
Right.
And then he said the same thing. He was like, it's too late. It's like 11 o'clock. So
Brent goes
actually
to sleep at about 8.
He just shut down. Then we put him in his chamber. So actually, yes, I'm glad we were able to clear that up. Brent was actually booked first in the
Brent
early
was
show.
Actually booked.
We
first.
Tried to get him to move so that we could accommodate you for the early show.
Right.
So that's what happened there. Whew. Correct. You know what? I just rerouted main power to the.
No, listen. We were stuck with fucking Will Wheaton again. God.
Now, come on, man. Come on. Got nothing but love for WW in my heart. I love WW.
Double dubs.
I love him.
Double dubs.
Although, I think I pissed him off.
What? You can't piss him off.
Well, I don't know. The Stanley Cup was in town the other day.
Oh!
Yes. I saw the tweet.
Okay.
And I tweeted, right? I tweeted a picture. And he was like, oh, my God, this is like... so unfair, right? And then I tweeted again another picture, and I said, not to rub it in, WW, but, and I tweeted another picture. So I think I crossed the line. I think I owe him an apology because I was actually a dick.
Well, I think I told you this the other day, but back when Will was making Star Trek money, he was such an insane Kings fan that he bought 4 seats at the Great Western Forum.
The fabulous forum.
Where you could actually buy seats and then they put your nameplate on the seat.
Little gold plate, yeah.
And then so for any event, those are just your seats. And he had those mainly for the Kings games.
I want to make Star Trek money.
Who's
got the most Star Trek money? I think it's Dorn.
Michael Dorn has more money than God.
Yeah.
how did he rank? Oh, because
he also invested in Fuddruckers. Is that true?
Is that true?
That's what I heard.
Seriously?
And then he was like, now I got fuck you money, so I'm just going to buy jets.
For a rollicking good time, come to Fuddruckers.
Michael Dorn has bank.
Yeah. I mean, he did DS9, yeah. all the movies.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Patrick,
7 seasons of
Patrick.
What about him?
He's a knight.
That's some X-Men money. I don't care about that shit.
You mean Star Trek related money? Yeah, I guess it would have to be Dorn.
It's Dorny.
I mean, of the stepping outside the original cast.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure he has more than Shatner.
How is that possible?
Shatner did 3 seasons.
Oh, but he also did films.
And 6 not great movies.
But it doesn't matter because he
7 really.
He would have been getting paid a ton for those to get Shatner and Nimoy in there.
Yeah, but then the pay bump went insane.
Also, Dorn, I don't know if Dorn does as many of the... I mean, if you're talking about ancillary income...
To. He owns jets.
What does Shatner get? What does Shatner get for...
Let's figure that out. What does Shatner get?
No, what does Shatner get for signings? It's some, like, insane number. It's 100 or...
No, he probably charges like...
No,
yeah.
Bill, we do not have to worry about Mr. Shatner.
Yeah, he's...
Plus, he's got the Priceline money.
Yeah,
man.
Probably got Priceline money.
Crazy.
He just buys and shoots horses or something.
just with money. With $100 bills.
Break their leg. What are you going to do?
He just loads like a wad of $100 bills.
His real money's from glue.
I think we've just crossed the line.
What?
I think we walked right up to it and stomped on it.
Only sure I know.
Only William Shatner's horse glue could hold this show together at this point.
That one of my favorite things was during the in Generations in the commentary track. There's one track with Ron Moore and Braga, and they're saying how Shatner charged the production a ridiculous day rate to use his horses.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, and he wanted a horse. He wanted them to have a horse scene in there.
Oh,
and
so
then.
He could
use my horses.
Yeah. Oh, also, there's a Nexus fee. Any horse that appears in a Nexus is going to have a slightly higher rate than any non-Nexus horses.
But you saw him. I mean, he's quite.
Oh, he's a very good equestrian.
The equestrian. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Patrick Stewart's pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Patrick's not bad.
We should have horse contests.
We had.
I don't know what that would be.
A horse contest?
Yeah. They would just forget it.
I. What are they, like what horses, bare-knuckle boxing?
It could be anything.
A horse off?
Yeah. Horse fight.
Stuart and Shatner horse off. Jousting.
Jousting. For charity.
Charity joust.
Charity joust would be awesome.
Nice.
I think Patrick would take him.
I don't know.
At this point?
I don't know.
Well, Shatner's like 10 years older than Patrick, I think.
Yeah.
So.
And not particularly. He's like in my shape.
Patrick
is a bull. Seriously. True. He works harder than anybody.
And
he really does.
He's still fucking working.
He does.
He really does.
The day he stops working is the day he dies.
I think he's going to.
Because he will just go.
Yeah.
Sir Patrick Stewart told us a story on the podcast. I had him on last year, and he told the story about they were shooting a scene, and it was a very long day. And you fell asleep behind your visor, so they just. Dude, do you have anything to? Is there? And then they just shot the scene. Just shot the scene around you, saying, "Cause
bastard, he told that story.
That's so it's true,
asshole." Sir Patrick, asshole. That is such an asshat thing to do. You don't throw your fellow thespians under the bus. That is not okay.
He probably was just telling it out of jealousy. He wished he had a visor.
Man.
Well, to be fair, he told way worse stories about stuff that he did.
Did he?
Where he would fall asleep in close-ups he told stories about being really cranky the first season you guys loosened him up and it changed his life.
It did.
So, you know, he was very complimentary, but it did come down to the one time LeVar fell asleep behind the visor.
Yeah, yeah.
it was almost like telling tales at school. It was so adorable.
Well, here's what I have to say about that. Have you seen any of Brent Spiner's Fresh Hell?
Yes, I have.
Did you see the episode that I was in?
No, I saw.
I just need to remind people that man, Patrick Stewart, has the foulest balls.
Whoa, wait, what?
That's all I'm going to say.
What is a foul? What?
He has the foulest smelling balls in show business.
Watch the episode of Fresh Hell, everyone.
Fresh Hell, and you'll understand what I'm talking about.
I think it's YouTube Fresh Hell Series, I think.
FreshHellSeries.com.
Yeah.
FreshHellSeries.com.
This is exciting for me.
I mean, because whenever I was watching and I see sitting in the captain's chair, I'm like, I wonder what effect that has
on ball smell
down there.
Yeah.
Just being in that suit, those suits did not, the Federation suits did not look
comfortable. They were not.
How uncomfortable? Like when you got to the move, like when they threw the gray one on you, that was more comfortable.
That was comfortable. But the singlets, the polyester singlets in the first season, very uncomfortable.
They don't breathe. You're sweating inside the whole time.
No, I mean, it's universally acknowledged that we all hated our spacesuits. That's true.
They went two seasons with those.
Yeah.
Is it fun? Do you like the idea that, you know, you worked on this show and still after, you know, 25 years, mm-hmm. people are still so familiar with it and talking about it mm-hmm. and essentially doing what we're doing mm-hmm. and throwing all. I mean, is it Is that irritating in any way, or is it still fun? Is it still exciting for you?
You have to remember, I'm a Star Trek fan.
Right.
Right. So it's a lot of fun for me. I love the Star Trek universe. I love everything about it. It's all good.
Have you read any of the fan fiction?
I have not.
Okay. That's probably best.
Is that good advice?
I think it's probably
excellent advice. Yeah. I don't even read it.
Okay.
Cool. Oh, you haven't read any of the Star Trek fan fiction?
No.
See, I'm with Matt.
Why would I do that?
There's got to be some good.
I stick to canon.
Okay.
He's a purist.
Okay.
The man's a purist.
I never, when I was in college, I worked at a country club. I worked at Bel Air Country Club because I went to UCLA and it was right there. It was very fancy. But Gene Roddenberry was a member there.
Yes, he was.
And so, it's not like I ever had extensive conversations with him, but there were times. And in the last couple years of his life, he wasn't doing as well. So as someone who was parking cars in the lot, I would drive him home occasionally.
Really?
Yeah.
In the Rolls?
In the Rolls.
In the Rolls.
Yes. Yeah. And then, you know, get a ride back. Cause right. he didn't live too far, right. Didn't live too far from there. And, he was a very sweet guy, but I was always just kind of frozen with like, there's really nothing you can say in that situation.
Can you tell you any boozy stories about?
No. And Majel was, I was afraid of her.
As you should be.
Not that she was mean, but just she had an energy about her that was just sort of like,
no nonsense.
Don't fuck with me, yes. You know? And so. Right.
Don't fuck with me, Sonny.
Exactly. Oh my God, this is the worst. They had a holiday party one year. And so they got some of the guys from the country club to park cars at their thing. And we, I don't know why we did this. We parked all the cars for the party on one side of the street, but facing the wrong way. And for some reason, parking enforcement came up through Bel Air, ticketed every car. We could not talk them out of it. And we had to go into Majel and say, with the stack of parking tickets, and be like,
wow,
we did this.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
Merry Christmas.
And then had to turn all the cars around.
So you didn't get paid for that?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that was the last time you were at
coming out of your pace, Sonny.
As a matter of fact, it was the very last time. That did not didn't happen anymore after that.
Let's talk to LeVar about the fact that why didn't Jordy ever get laid? That's why.
We already covered this.
Why? Where was I?
We covered this. And
what the fuck?
His answer was that he didn't. He has this theory that the writers didn't know how to approach black male sexuality, and so they just didn't deal with it at all.
Worf got laid.
But Worf was Klingon.
All right. Fine.
I mean, we know as fans that in...
Oh, that makes me feel better.
I mean, I'm just saying.
That makes me feel better. Thank you.
I think it's worth it to pool all of our money to shoot one more episode.
Let's do it!
Wow.
Where...
Geordi gets the girl?
Geordi
finally gets to Riser without getting abducted by Romulans.
Or, you know what we could do? I have a better idea.
Listening.
I have a better idea. This would be a lot cheaper. Uh-huh. Okay, my previous idea is very expensive. What we should do is go in and cut together a montage of scenes that suggests that Geordi was screwing everyone the entire time and no one would talk about it. So there were a lot of like subtle glances or just that he
including
fucked everybody.
Including Mott.
Everybody. Barber.
A little revisionist history.
I love this idea that the whole that's why you never saw it because he was so smooth that he had everyone and no one knew it.
Well, you almost nailed the hologram of Dr. Leah Brahms, who Q decided you married later.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was weird.
Yeah.
Let's see. Then you fell in love with that dead girl who was there was a dog that turned into another
Aquiel.
Alien. Yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not a great episode.
No, not a great
not your fault.
No.
You are great in it.
No, but the
story is awful.
Stinky.
Yep.
Matt, you might be nerding out a little too much.
That was the lovely Renee Jones. That was the lovely Renee Jones.
Oh, no, she was great too.
Aquiel.
Again, not her fault.
Not her fault. Not her fault.
That episode is that was one of the first episodes like when we did Star Trek, which is a show I do at Meltdown where we watch the worst episodes of Star Trek, and we talk over them.
They kind of Mystery Science Theater
Mystery
then,
Science,
in a fun, loving way.
Yeah,
like
we had
like
Will,
as huge fans
we had
of the
Will
show
on, like,
did you?
Last month.
Did
yeah,
you?
It was
hysterical.
I did the episode where Dr. Beverly Crusher basically is sexually molested by
Sub
a ghost.
Rosa.
Yeah.
Yep.
But then falls in love with them, and there's all this craziness. And then there's some sort of a weird...
She's clearly getting off, and Picard walks in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah. Right. She was.
And then there's some sort of encounter.
That Picard should have like a some sort of code like Alpha 39 or something like that just beams him out of awkward situations.
Alpha 39. Get him out of there. Something weird's going on. Get him out of there. Something strange is happening.
Did you get Alpha 39?
I got such an Alpha 39. So uncomfortable.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And then there was some like weird Mayan kind of a storyline.
Masks?
Oh, that was masks.
Masks.
Every season, Brent got to laugh in an episode.
Right.
And that was it.
What was your favorite episode, Matthew?
My favorite episode of Star Trek is probably Timescape, which is...
What happens then?
That is the one where you guys you come back on the runabout, and the Enterprise is frozen in time with a Romulan ship right there. Sixth season. There's a quantum singularity, right? The artificial quantum singularity, which powers the Romulan ship. These aliens that breed inside of quantum singularities think it's a real one.
Ouch!
So one where time is stopped.
Think it's a real ship?
They think it's a real quantum singularity, so they breed
quantum
thing.
Singularity.
That really hurt.
Sixth season. It's the runabout episode. Very prominent in it.
Matt, can I make
In fact, you notice that the Romulan, you like, wasn't he over here? And Data doesn't even notice it. And then the Romulan comes up and touches you,
Matt,
and then you go into epileptic
shock. Matt, you've got to stop. I'm in a lot of pain. I think I just got my virginity back.
I must be in
How
all,
do you
all...
not know Timescape?
Of the 179 episodes, there are about 80 I've never seen.
You should watch that one.
You know what? On your recommendation, Matthew.
Timescape is very good.
I'm gonna watch.
Do you not like to watch your own work?
I love watching on TV. It's some of my favorite TV. That's when I'm on. But when we were making the show, it was just really too difficult to keep up.
I would imagine that you know, especially, I don't know if people know what it's like to work on a single camera show like that.
It consumes your life.
But, you know, you probably work 6 days a week.
5 days a week, 12 to 14 hours a day.
And they're just handing you, they're handing you scenes every day. You probably don't even know what show you're in.
It's very difficult to keep up. So I made a conscious decision that I wasn't going to sweat it, that, you know, this was going to be here for a while, and I can spend the rest of my life sitting down and enjoying episodes. And
so when it comes out on Blu-ray,
right,
take a look.
Right.
It's in a book.
Timescape.
Yeah, Timescape is great.
All right.
Sixth season.
Okay.
Can't believe you don't remember it.
I'm sorry.
The Enterprise is frozen. It looks like they're in a battle with the Romulan ship.
I don't know if any more words are going to help dredge it up. He hasn't seen it.
Have I disappointed you, Matthew?
It's a really good... I just feel bad. I feel bad for you.
You feel bad for me. No, you should be excited for him.
Bad for you.
You should be excited for him that he's going to get to see Timescape for the first time. You should be jealous of that.
I am a little bit jealous of that. But I'll tell you what. That's really a great episode.
Okay.
God.
I'm
What other
really
what other kind of
word for
What other kind of stuff are you What other kind of stuff are you into? Like what's LeVar time look like?
I actually do love reading. Reading and traveling. Reading, traveling and drinking.
See, I like two of those things.
Where have you been lately that I should be going?
Lately, my favorite place on the planet probably is the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love going to the Caribbean.
They know what they're doing down there.
What?
No, I'm just, they know what they're doing.
Oh, they do. Yeah. They know how to live.
Look at this.
They
check out that water. Yeah. It's blue. Yep. Want this drink? Also blue.
Right?
Check out the sky. Guess what?
Blue.
I do enjoy my time in the Caribbean. We took a great trip last year. Was it last year?
Yeah.
To Suriname. I did an American sportsman show back in the 70s. In a country called Suriname.
Yep.
And we made a return trip 25 years later to the very village that I had been in with the American Sportsman and shot video footage for the Reading Rainbow app. So,
wow.
Did they remember? Because that could have been one of the biggest things that happened there.
It is so wild. Kunta Kinte is a national hero in the country of Suriname. They write songs about him. It was a trip going back. It really was. It was astonishing to see the changes in not just in the country, but in the village of Dratapaji itself, it was quite extraordinary.
Do people expect you to know things about Kunta Kinte the way he expects you to know Star Trek? Have you read all the Kunta Kinte fan fiction?
I don't expect him to know everything about Star Trek. I just expect him to have seen a particularly good episode from late in the series run.
You're right, Matthew, and I'll do better.
Matt's so intense, his glasses are off, his forehead is sweating.
He's sweating. He's like,
I'm just angry about it.
His face is turning tomato red.
Yeah, I sensed some disappointment. You didn't cop to it at first, but now I can see your face is flushed.
What is this?
Perspiring.
What are we doing here, Matt?
I bet he's seen all of Roots.
It's 8 episodes.
I have.
So?
I have indeed.
Me too. Good work.
Thank you,
Matt. It's the episode of Roots where the Colonials are frozen in the time vortex and everyone's...
That's, you guys are fine.
I would watch that.
It is, but
I would watch that.
I would watch that too. And actually, it sounds like a Doctor Who episode of some type. Mm. What other are you a Doctor Who fan? Do you sci-fi?
Yeah, my daughter got me into Who. She also got me into Sherlock as well.
So great, Moffat. It's all Moffat.
All Moffat. All Stephen.
All
Moffat.
All the time.
All Moffat. All the time. And he also has a great Jekyll and Hyde series. It's really fun too. It's on Netflix. It's super British. The production values are pretty low, but it's a really well done Jekyll and Hyde. It's really fun. Yeah. And again, mega British.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I recommend that.
Timescape is the 151st episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Okay.
Board or runabout? Let's just see if this brings up anything for Mr. Burton.
I'm gonna skip Patrick Stewart's balls to get you to stop this.
I'll just read Captain's log, Stardate 46944.2. Commander Data, Mr. LaForge.
Yes.
Alpha 39.
Are en route to the Enterprise after attending a 3-day conference on the psychological effects of long-term deep space assignments. So far, so good. You're sitting around a runabout table.
Right.
In a runabout.
Right.
Okay.
In the back.
In the back. You guys are hanging out, talking.
Who's driving?
No one's driving. It's on autopilot.
On autopilot, okay.
And then LaForge, you know, you're like talking about how you touched a plasma field.
Uh-huh.
You do some good acting in there. You put your hand out and you're like, you could feel it moving. And then you stop because time freezes.
Wow.
Right where you are. And the only one who doesn't freeze is Troy. And she goes, am I crazy? Which she kind of is. But then time moves on and then you guys start some shit. And then you go back to the Enterprise.
How could you not be crazy as an empath if you're absorbing the emotions of everyone?
I'm right. You had me at Captain's Log.
Yay!
You should be very excited also to know. Did you see the IDW Star Trek Doctor Who crossover comic series?
I saw somebody tweeted a picture of the cover, but I have not. Is it out?
First issue's out. I read it.
And
it's the first issue's very Doctor Who heavy.
Is it?
But at the end of the issue, they end up looking to the right, and then they see it's like 1940s, and they see Crusher and Data.
Huh.
So I'm assuming the TARDIS has landed in the holodeck.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. Is there anything else you want to...
I mean, do you remember when the warp core breach is frozen in time and Patrick Stewart draws a smiley face on it?
Nope.
I don't...
Wow.
Nope. Sorry. Wow. Nope. Not gonna. You're doing basically your version of right now, Matt, is when someone doesn't speak the same language as you and you start talking louder.
Here is you.
Like that's gonna help.
With a Romulan.
Give him a picture of it! Come on, Matt!
You don't remember that.
Sorry.
Matt, he doesn't have amnesia, he just hasn't seen the episode.
This is terrible.
He just hasn't seen the damn episode.
I don't wanna go, I'm living.
It's not that serious.
Feels like maybe a little extreme.
Whatever. You know what? I've seen it.
How many times?
Many times.
So
okay. One of the first episodes that I ripped onto my computer, and
really,
I kept it with me always.
Okay.
You guys are jerks.
We contained him as much as we could, LaVar.
No. What did I say before he entered the studio? What did I say?
He's having a core meltdown. You're going to reroute his power.
Someone do something.
And up, Matt's all out of warp cores.
He's ejected the core.
When are you
going to
run out of warp cores, Matt? When are you going to run out of warp cores?
I just did.
He's fresh out of warp cores.
Alpha
36. Yay, he said it.
Alpha 39. What was it, Alpha 36?
Alpha 39, I think.
Alpha 39. Alpha 39. Get me out of here. Alpha 39. Matt's freaking out.
Whatever.
You're also going to be, you're doing the Eric McCormick series as well,
Perception.
Right? Perception.
Perception, beginning July 9th on TNT.
That's exciting.
It is. I'm back on TV.
That's fun.
I know.
TV's fun. The single camera schedule's kind of a bitch, but in general, TV's fun. It just I like it.
And I like the show. Ken Biller and Mike Sussman, Star Trek alums, have written a really smart look at brain chemistry and how it literally shapes our reality. And I think it could, if it catches on, if the show catches on, it could really spark a great conversation in this country about the stigma of mental illness.
Sure.
And you know, we really need to reevaluate, you know, how we feel about people who have brain chemistry that goes a little wonky from time to time.
But, and unfortunately, the idea of perception is greater than just mental illness and the fact that most of us live such virtual lives.
Yeah.
That,
right?
You know, we piece all this. I mean, like, you can create pretty much any perception about any situation given the amount of information that you surround yourself with.
Yeah,
so, right. I mean, so even just on for people who have, you know, brain chemistry that's not wonky,
right?
It's difficult enough to sort of navigate the way that we exist now.
True.
As it is.
And I don't think we've ever seen this character before. I mean, Eric plays a neuroscientist who is schizophrenic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he helps the FBI solve crimes.
It sounds much better than numbers. I'm not gonna
lie. All the clues are in the numbers.
We certainly hope so.
Look at this. I'm looking at all these numbers. I think he killed that guy. That's my impersonation.
I know Mike Sussman. I worked with his brother Bobby at the Apple Store.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That must have been a big thing for you.
What do you mean? For me to know Mike Sussman?
Yeah.
No, I mean, it was fine.
No, whatever.
I'm cool.
Oh, now you're playing it off.
I mean, it was just Voyager we worked on. I mean, it was Enterprise and stuff. Whatever.
Voyager was a lovely show.
Voyager was a good program. You directed a couple of
decent
episodes of Voyager.
I tried my best.
He even pops up in one as Captain LaForge.
Timeless, the 100th episode of Voyager.
Oh, this he knows.
Well, he directed it. Of course he's going to remember.
This he remembers. Whatever.
Of course he's going to remember that.
I've really disappointed you.
Quite the opposite, LeVar.
Okay. All right.
Matt.
Let's do a web series where LeVar and I have to hang out all the time.
I can think of one person in this room who wouldn't want to do that.
Why are you pointing at yourself?
I'm pointing at LeVar. Yeah, I think LeVar might enjoy that for like 10 minutes. Like, this is a really fun idea. What have I done?
That would be awful for you.
No,
I'm
you
sorry.
Guys are terrific.
I
have to say this. Now, I'm sorry. I know it's your show. I just need to interrupt.
Please, please.
I have not had this much fun in quite some time.
Oh, that's awesome.
We did it.
Yeah.
Well, we love having you on.
Just wait till he gets home and turns on Timescape.
That's when the party really begins. Huh?
Oh, I thought I knew fun before. But now, would that I could be frozen in this moment of me experiencing Timescape for the first time, much like the storyline of Timescape. I knew the podcast was going to be fun when we've never really talked before much, except for the like 2 seconds we met, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then when you came on Attack of the Show, instantly it was like, Chris, LeVar, hey! And I was like, this is going to be great. And it's been so much fun. So it was an absolute pleasure to have you on. You're welcome to come on anytime. I think the series between you guys is called Alpha 39, and it's at what at what point can LeVar
can
not
up.
Hang out with you anymore?
At one point during every show.
Every show, you're like,
the fuck out.
Alpha 39. You're like, that's it. I thought I was okay. And sometimes it could be within the first 5 seconds.
It could. You never know. Then.
You
that's
might go
the suspense.
As long
that's
as
where
8 minutes
comes in.
Alpha 39. And then he's gone.
But the show is always 8 minutes, so it's like 7 minutes of me alone, just staring at the spot where LeVar was. And it always ends with me turning on Timescape.
Just you and me again, Timescape. Just you and me again.
Oh, boy.
Oh, all right. Thank you for being here, LeVar Burton. The Reading Rainbow app available on the iTunes Store. Perception, LeVar Burton, at LeVar Burton on the tweets.
Even if you don't have a kid, buy the Reading Rainbow app.
Yeah,
stop
you can
being
probably
so
do
cheap, jerk.
Let's be honest. You could probably do a little bit better with your reading anyway. Yeah. And even if not, then I think what's fun about an app like Reading Rainbow is that it's a fun way to interact with something nostalgic that is gonna strike a chord in you that you forgot was there. I mean, like, oh my gosh.
How much is the app?
The app is free to download. You get to roam around in the world that we've created. You get to download one free book to unlock all the content. And we've launched with 150 books and 16 videos, video field trips with LeVar. $9.99 a month and an offering for launch, $29.99 for 6 months. That's $5 a month.
That is a pittance.
You know what, we really
to learn to read
of value for
families. Not bad.
$5, you could spend $5 on a single app book for kids. So we really think that, you know, giving children access to a library of literature, digital literature, is
I think $29 for an investment in a passion for education is probably a pretty good deal.
Plus you spend $29 and they throw the theme song in. Which
yes,
is worth
do.
At least
yes,
$27.
Yes,
yeah,
do.
so $2 to learn to read, $27 for the
theme
song.
Which
yeah.
is a very fair price.
Hey, Matt?
Yes?
Want to go watch some TV?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's watch Times Game.
Oh, Alpha 3-9.
Oh, Chris, you beamed away too?
Mentally. Enjoy your burrito.
We did it.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.